Welcome to Plastic Model Mojo, a podcast dedicated to scale modeling, as well as the news and events around the hobby. Let's join Mike and Kentucky Dave as they strive to be informative, entertaining, and help you keep your modeling mojo alive.
What's happening, Kentucky Dave?
Well, all good things. All good things.
I'll use your gold fence given nickname tonight.
That's okay. Hey, listen, there's nothing better than a nickname just bestowed on you by the Podfather himself.
Well, you can't make your own nickname.
No, that's right.
Doesn't work that way,
no,
does it?
No, it doesn't work.
Well, November is clicking along here, man. We're about at the middle of the month. The year's going to wrap up quick. So we gotta finish strong, man.
I know. We're approaching what I call the dark time between Thanksgiving and New Year, where traditionally, at least before this podcast, I would get no modeling done. So now, luckily, the podcast has really helped with that. But we're racing toward that time again. And I got to say, I'm jazzed, and in no small part, thanks to you.
Well, you're welcome, I guess. Well, my friend, what's been up in your model sphere the last couple of weeks?
Well, as I said previously, my model sphere's been clicking along really well. Reading history books, which motivates me to build and plan, etc. That's continuing, and in fact has gone into the planning stages. But frankly, I just finished a really good week of modeling, and it was because you came up with an idea that really pushed. It worked in ways that I did not think it would.
Which may be what's up in my model sphere.
I know. Well, since you're the originator of this idea, I think you need to talk about where it came from and what we did and how it worked out.
Well, I think, was it maybe last episode?
Yeah.
I said something about, what was it? I think it was along the lines of just got to get down there and do it, right?
Right.
I took a different approach and made a suggestion to you, and we ended up doing it. And what that was for us, that meant instead of committing to trying to get this done by that show or you know, stuff along that line.
Right.
I said, let's try to commit to logging X number of hours at the bench over the next week. Now, so this is, we're just coming out. It's Sunday for us. We're recording on Sunday. This is actually the first day of the second week we're going to try this. But for the first week, we pledged an hour amount to try to get to the bench and do real work at the bench, not surf the internet, not be on Facebook, not be on Instagram, not being on any of that crap. So,
and that was one of the parts of this that I think probably worked most for me. I get to the bench a lot, but I burn time doing stuff that isn't completing a model. And having made a commitment to track time, not only at the bench, but actually modeling, moving the ball forward down the field, doing actual hands-on modeling, not watching a YouTube video or whatever, that refocused me in ways I didn't expect.
I pledged to try to be at my bench doing real modeling for 14 hours over those 7 days. So that was going to be like 2 hours a day on average. And you pledged, I think, 10, is that right?
10. Yeah.
And we're both happy to report, and we'll hear more about the exact needles that got moved
right
during the benchtop halftime report. But I'm happy to report that we both overachieved.
Yes. Yeah.
I think I knew I had a vacant Saturday coming up that I could get some stuff done. So I kind of swung for the fence and with my 14, and your 10 was, that's not too shabby either. But you had some reservations. I think we both decided that in the coming week, we're going to ratchet it back a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm probably going to aim for 10, and you're going to go for what?
Probably about 8 or maybe 9, simply because that, I mean, in pushing to make sure that I got my 10 in, which actually turned out to be 13, I need to do some other stuff, house related, family related, that I kind of pushed to the side because I'd made the commitment, and I can't do that long term because, you know, marital happiness, et cetera, yeah, is not going to allow that. But it helped focus me, get me down at the bench. And like I said, not only down at the bench, but actual modeling.
And the actual hours was just a way to quantify and measure. That really wasn't
right.
The primary goal. The primary goal was to figure out how to make the time to get down there to do what you needed to be doing.
Right.
On the projects. And I think it's kind of like, I don't know, a New Year's resolution or an exercise program or whatever, right? You got to try to drive yourself to a habit.
Yes.
And this is kind of the front end of what that might look like.
Well, and not only that, but the accountability to another person, I think, really, really makes a difference. I mean, you can make that commitment to yourself, but it's different when you're reporting those results to another person. Because that just that you feel motivated to get that done. I mean, we one of the reasons we started this podcast was to hold ourselves accountable to get things moving. And I think this is just another way to do that.
Well, I think it's in reinvigorating it, because I think here in the last, I don't know, maybe even a year, we've not done such a great job at it.
Yes. Yep. Yep.
So,
I think we started to focus on the podcast for the podcast's sake rather than for the modeling's sake. So, yeah, no, I agree.
I'd be curious what folks out there do to push things forward. You can write into the show and let us know. I'd be really curious to see, because this is just kind of the first attempt at this. I don't know if this is how we're going to keep doing it or if we'll even keep doing it. But
right. It's an experiment in motivation.
And time management.
Yes.
All right.
All right. Well, Mike, another episode, another modeling fluid. You got a modeling fluid in front of you?
I do, and it's not seltzer water tonight, buddy.
That's good. That's good.
I went out and treated myself to a bottle of Old Forester 1920 Prohibition style.
Well, you need whiskey. To tell the people why you are treating yourself to a bottle of Old Forester 1920 Prohibition style, because it's really cool. And you need to tell people why.
If folks were paying attention, Crew Resupply Mission 29, SpaceX 29 launched, I think, what was it, Friday this week?
Friday, and then docked Saturday.
And Saturday, and the exchange started today of the materials. I've been touching a lot of stuff that's been going up there in my job with my current employer. But right. This time, it was the first time that there were actually parts that I had fabricated, cleaned and processed, and flight qualified on my own that went into all four of the payloads that went up to the ISS Friday. Really, really cool. I think this might be kind of high tide, the new high tide for my career. It's just really a thrilling thing. So I went out and got some Old Forester 1920, because it's about $55 a bottle. Just been enjoying it since Friday. That's what I've been doing.
Hey, something you made with your own hands is currently in space, and there are not many people on the planet who get to say that. So congratulations, and that Old Forester is well-deserved.
Well, what are you sipping on, my friend?
Well,
it's in a can.
It's in a can. I have in my hand a can of Atomic Amber from Apocalypse Brew Works.
Oh, yeah.
Here in Louisville, Kentucky. They're on Melwood Avenue in Louisville. I had no idea they existed until late last week. I was driving home from work, and I took a route I normally don't take, and it got me driving right past this microbrewery called Apocalypse Brew Works. So I went out. I picked up a can of their Atomic Amber.
It's good.
Hang on. Oh, that is good.
Dude, I got their sticker on my spray booth. You're behind the times.
These microbreweries, particularly in Louisville, because Louisville, kind of like Milwaukee, was a center of brewing for many, many years. So now with the resurgence and all of this, these microbreweries are popping up. I don't know how long Apocalypse has been around, but I just learned they existed. You obviously knew.
I've had it. I don't know how long they've been around either. I picked up the sticker at a, you know, they had a brew truck at a event or something maybe.
Yeah.
I think that's probably where I got it. But yeah, it's good.
Well, so far I can, you know, we'll wrap it up at the end. But so far I can report that all signs are positive.
Oh, and to backtrack a little bit, there was one more thing I meant to mention during the model sphere.
Okay.
I was reading something. I don't know how I got there. Probably I'd been watching like Game of Thrones reruns, you know, going looking at those. And there are, I was talking Dungeons and Dragons with a coworker, and I started looking at medieval stuff again.
Yeah.
For some reason. So pay attention, folks, especially your figure builders. You're going to get a vignette idea out of this and a title for it.
Okay.
It was Prague, because Prague's like the most well-preserved medieval city in Europe.
Right.
And this thing was talking about this knight. And so I can't remember if it was a tournament or what, but this knight was getting ready. He was putting on all his armor, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he had his squire with him. And good grief, man. I don't see how they did this.
Yes.
And just the weight of it, the number of components, the way it all fit together.
Yep.
But anyway, they get him all donned up, and they go to the tournament field, and the squire makes an announcement. And you know what it was?
What?
The check is in the mail.
Oh, God, no.
And speaking of mail, Dave, it's listener mail time.
No, no, no.
Gotcha.
Oh, God, yes. Okay. Moving on. Do we have some listener mail?
Andrew DeBoer is written in again because he was listening to the episode where we were, it wasn't me. It was you, buddy.
Okay.
Talking about organization and time management.
Yep.
And he dropped what he was doing, which was raking leaves.
Okay.
And ran down to the workshop to slay the dragon.
Okay.
The dragon he went to slay that he's been avoiding was a Tamiya USS New Jersey in 1/350th scale.
Yep.
That he was going to waterline, and he was just coming up with every reason in the world, it sounds like, to not do that. Well, when he heard us talking about those things, within 30 minutes and 30 inches of Dymo tape and a Tamiya Scriber, he had slayed the dragon before episode 102 had even finished.
You know what? That makes a really great point. A lot of times we're procrastinating because we think something is going to be much more difficult than it actually turns out to be when you get on the horse and do it.
That's right. And yep. His lesson was, this is going to be our subplot for this episode, apparently.
Okay.
Organization is just an excuse. I'm going to pay more attention to the ways I avoid tackling tasks.
Yes. Absolutely. And that's,
well, you know, to push back a little on your comments on that, maybe you need to explain what you mean by organization better, because I would say that if Dave has all his paints lined up in a row and all his tools in their holders and all this stuff where it's supposed to be, that's got nothing to do with you working on that F8.
You're absolutely right. What I mean by organization is, okay, I've got a workbench with 13 feet of space, and it's a mess, and I'm modeling on a workspace that's no bigger than 8x10 sheet of paper at most, because it's a mess. And the place where lack of organization bites me in the butt is when I use something, I put it down on the desk instead of putting it back where it belongs. So when I next need to use that item, Dymo tape, scriber, tweezers, a brush, whatever, instead of it being where it's supposed to be, I end up spending 5 or 10 minutes looking around, trying to figure out where I've put it or where I've laid it. That adds up. That sucks the life out of your modeling. So that's what I mean by organization. Now, motivation is a different topic, and that's kind of what you and I were addressing this past week in holding each other accountable to move our projects forward. That's being motivated. But the lack of organization is 75% of it is down to me not putting things away when I've used them.
That's kind of a microscopic thing. I mean, it's you're already at your bench modeling. So
right.
So this is kind of a efficiency
yes.
play.
Yep.
Okay.
And if I can recapture 10 minutes, and now it's more than that because it happens repeatedly. So, you know, if I'm in a 1 hour modeling session and I spend 3 5-minute breaks trying to locate something that I should be able to put my hands on right away, not only does it take the momentum out of my modeling, but it robs me of 15 minutes of modeling time.
Well, you're going to have to be disciplined, Dave, to keep up, put your stuff back.
That's I am working on that. I am working on that. And you know what? We've got an upcoming episode with Chris Wallace talking about him moving into a new modeling space and all of that. I've noticed from photographs of the benches of modelers I really admire who really produce lots of really good models, they are all super organized.
Well, while you're getting organized, Dave, we'll move on.
Okay.
Thomas Karen from Kearns, Utah. Enjoyed our interview with Steve Husted. Well, we enjoyed it too. Mm-hmm. It's always fun. So hopefully we'll see him soon.
Oh, yeah.
He builds just about everything, planes, trains, and automobiles, and would love to see us have an automotive builder guest. Well, so would we.
Yes.
And we got a couple in mind, and we just haven't.
We have had Ian McCauley on, although he wasn't on specifically for the purposes of automotive.
Yeah, so it doesn't count in that column.
Yeah, so it really doesn't count. But Ian, who was on one of our episodes, one of our wheel episodes a while back, he is a very prolific auto modeler.
He is, and I've got one more who floats around the dojo a little bit I would really yep. need to approach about coming on the show. So thank you for that, Tom. We'll take that under advisement. Even better than that, we're actively trying to fix that hole in our programming. Mark Duramus, he's out there with Jim on the West Coast.
Yes, he is.
In the Seattle area. And he thinks we kind of missed the point about his group build comments in episode 102. He says it was more of a lamentation rather than a celebration.
Oh, okay.
He was cranking out 12 to 15 models during 2020 and 2021 and acknowledges there may have been something going on that gave him more free time back then, like a pandemic. He says over the last couple of years, he's become less enchanted with the whole concept. And I guess this group build thing is amplifying the number of shelf queens that he's generating.
Jim struggles with that exact same problem. And I can see how that happens.
This is a struggle. You talk about some shackles that are easy to throw off.
Yes.
Just don't.
Right.
No's a real word.
Yep. And sometimes learn when to say no. That's a very, very empowering lesson to learn.
I mean, if this is your jam, go for it. I don't think it's his anymore. It was. It's not mine. I get it.
Yep.
So his question was really, what inspires us to select our next build? Other than trying to line up a new technique occasional group build or literary inspirations like we've talked about in the past. Do you have any other suggestions for inspiring your next build?
Yes, I do. Boy, this is teeing up a subject that over the last couple of weeks I've been dealing with. And let me get
his last comment in here before you take off there.
Go ahead.
He's heard us mention new kits all the time, and he doesn't recall either of us just jumping into building something as soon as it arrives, or really any project for that matter. So there's obviously something behind it. He's got nearly 500 kits and he's 69 years old. So what are we doing, Dave? What are we doing?
Welcome to my world. again, we've talked about acquiring kits for the sake of acquiring kits, the joy that it brings you. But how do I choose my next build? I've actually been focused on this in the last couple of weeks because there are a lot of subjects that I would like to have in my case. There are things that are particular areas of interest to me, yet I find myself putting off building them. I think part of that is the I'm not good enough yet syndrome. I think part of it is getting distracted by, say, a group build or something like that. But he's 69, I'm 62 and a half, and I've recently come to the realization that one of the things about modeling is I want to model things that I am particularly interested in. And I don't want to put those off for that in the future that never seems to get here. So you and I have, as a tradition, at the end of each year, kind of planned out what five kits we would like to complete in the coming year. Now, we have varying degrees of success on that, and also a lot of times what we
that's
say...
That's generous.
I was being generous. And not only that, but a lot of times when you look back at the end of the year, what you did complete or even start bears little relation to what was on your list at the beginning. And so I really have decided for 2024, and we'll address this maybe as a full episode down the road, but I've really decided that I'm going to focus on certain subjects for 2024 that are things that I have a particular interest in, that I've wanted to build, that I've been putting off building, and try and narrow my focus to those things that I've always talked about building or I've always read on the subject or whatever, as opposed to just kind of letting whatever happens and building whatever kit I happen to pick up next out of the stash, which I think has probably been what I've done over the last 5 or 7 years. And looking back on it, I should have come to this conclusion earlier.
Yeah, maybe. But you're there now, so mm-hmm. I'm excited for you. I'm excited to...
Yeah, because I'm really fired up about 2024. I have ideas.
We'll talk about that more in an episode, probably in December, maybe.
Yep.
I just, you know, I'm always looking at books and photographs, and a photograph will catch my eye.
Right.
And then I'll start digging in to see what's the kit availability and what's the reference availability. And the more I get into something, and the more I go down that path, the more this subject gets more intriguing for me. So
do you find it more intriguing when it is a more obscure subject?
Not necessarily. I think, you know, like the KV-85 is pretty obscure.
Well, that's exactly what I was thinking of and wondered, was there a particular photograph that motivated you to go down that road? And does the fact that there is not as much information on the KV-85 as there are on, you know, T-34s or KV-1s or whatever, did you find that particularly motivating?
I think I saw the Kummersdorf Proving Grounds photos of White 31 that was captured in, I think, 1943. This is the KV-85 with the
right.
White 31, the big White 31 turret number on it. It had been chalk marked with all the armor thicknesses at all the various points on the vehicle, like they always did with the captured equipment. And it's just this big, hulking, menacing-looking thing. And I'm like, I'd really like to build that. That was probably enough to kick it off. The obscurity and rarity of the thing and, you know, the lack of information, I don't know if that made it – it made me dig harder. I don't know if it made me want to build it more.
Okay.
It's more of like an oh, crap.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm starting to see the holes in the reference and what we don't know. And here still, I've been on the KV85 journey for about 14 years. I had a false start and then I abandoned it for a long time. And now I think I've got a path to completion now, but there's still a couple of things that you're just not going to know.
Oh, right. You're going to have to guess that.
Yeah. Or hide it.
Or because hide. You're an armor modeler. Throw a tarp over it.
No, not that. One of the big areas of obscurity or that's kind of in the dark is literally in the dark because it's under the turret or overhang. So probably can't see it anyway.
Right.
So you swallow that pill and you can move forward. Well, Mark, I hope that helps. That's a little bit. There's a little insight onto what we got going on for how we select projects. But
yeah,
it's not group builds.
No, not group builds.
Up next, Dave, Rock Rozek, Detail and Scale.
Yes.
And he even mentions it. This book's not exactly new, but it's new-ish, I guess. P-47 Thunderbolt in Detail and Scale.
And I have seen a copy of this book, and I mentioned on the F8 that I'm doing that one of my go-to references was the Detail and Scale on the F8.
I'm sure.
And that's pretty true on any project I'm doing. If there's a detail and scale on it, it's going to be one of those references that I'm going to have by my side while I build it. Because whether it's a cockpit photo or a photo of a landing gear bay, you know, the things that we aircraft modelers geek out about. I don't know with what you armor folks do, maybe nuts and bolts or whatever. But I know that if I need to know what this looks like, I can grab that book, open it up, and I'm going to find a good photo of it. So I will tell you the P-47 book is awfully nice.
P-47 Thunderbolt and Detail and Scale. Detail and Scale Series Volume 17. Now, this is everything from the XP-47B through all the experimental Thunderbolt variants.
Yep.
If you're a type of modeler who wants to get all the visuals right, but you're not like ripping off every panel or looking for, you know, if you need a single point of reference for a good solid build of an aircraft, these books are...
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly the point I was making regarding the F8, is that I know that as I'm building it, particularly if the instructions, and I will tell you the Academy instructions on the F8 weren't the clearest in a couple of spots. You open up the book and you look at the actual aircraft, and all of a sudden you look back at the instructions and you're like, oh, that's what they're trying to tell me.
Well, Rock, thanks for the heads up on the P-47 Thunderbolt. And like I said, we'll get the word out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go buy it, folks. Their books are good.
Yes.
Steve Anderson from Matamita, Minnesota. Steve Nordicon again next year, Anderson.
Yep.
Well, obviously, Steve went to Nordicon.
Yes, he did.
And the one thing he wants to mention up front is he got to see a lot of Steve Husted's work lined up at
Yes.
Nordicon, all in one place.
I cannot tell you how much I got FOMO out of the photos from Nordicon, because what Steve did was basically brought out a very large number of his aircraft builds and aircraft dioramas, and he had an entire set of tables where he had these dioramas and then the photographs that they were based on. And those things are they're beyond words. I literally become speechless.
Well, he sure enjoyed it, and he enjoyed the show too. So $5 to $10 to get in the show, and he won some stuff in the raffle.
That's always good.
$10 worth of raffle tickets he sold on the local conventions. It's good fun, man.
Again, if you're a modeler and you are not going to local contests, and thanks to IPMS USA, there are modeling contests all over the United States. There's almost wherever you're located, even if you're out in the West where, you know, things are more sparsely populated. there's bound to be a model contest 2 or 3 hours away from you at some point during the year. And if you're not going, you're robbing yourself of a great experience because, you again, you go, you see other modelers, all these people speak the same language as you. You may not see a display like Steve Husted's, but you're going to see models that impress you and inspire you. So if you're not going, you're missing out. I'm telling you, go.
Well, his second point is comes out of our talking. I guess last episode we were talking about, there was in my faves and yawns, there were some Polish soldiers in 35th scale coming from IBG, I think.
Yeah.
And then you mentioned the South Korean K2.
Right.
Was being procured by Poland's right. Air Force.
Yeah. KF-21, I think.
Okay. Well, he said growing up, he wasn't interested in Poland at all until the Army said, hey, Steve, you're going to learn Polish. So since then, becoming versed in the language, which if you're really learning it, you get immersed in the history and all that right. stuff too. So now he's got a great interest in Polish subjects, either indigenous Polish stuff from the 39 battle or Polish Air Force in exile.
Yep.
Flying with the RAF, I guess.
Yep.
And the Red Army. It's yep. Eventually.
Yep.
He wants to know, is there any country besides the U.S. that's driven our interest in modeling?
Yes. Exclude the major players. Russia, Britain, Germany, Japan, even Italy, although I would maybe not so much a major player. For me, one of them is Romania during World War II, because Romania has a really interesting World War II history. Their Romanian stuff, World War II stuff, is way cool. I've got a Romanian ME-109E E4 that I built in Romanian markings that's in my case. And by the way, let me echo, Poland is unbelievably fascinating with a really, really rich history going back many, many millennia. The Poles are some tough dudes. We also have some Polish connections to the American Revolution, a number of Polish officers who came over to assist in the revolution. So I would echo his interest in Poland. But for me, another country would be Romania. How about you? Although I think I know your answer.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I think. Let's see.
In high school American history, when you're talking about World War II, at least when I was in school in the 80s, it was we won and some people helped.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
It's much more subtle now, nuanced.
Well, maybe. I don't know if it is or not.
Yeah.
Probably not.
If I had maybe, to guess. Maybe not. But
I started reading about the Eastern Front on my own.
Yeah.
And yeah, some other people helped. All right. Now you can get into, was the degree they helped fostered by the Lend-Lease program?
Right.
Yeah, some argument to be made there. That's all rhetorical. The point is, yes, studying the true involvement of the USSR in the Second World War has certainly influenced my modeling. Absolutely.
See, now I was going to, I thought you might be going Hungarian.
Hungary is a good one. And I'll talk more about that in another listener mail segment and maybe the next episode.
Okay.
But to the scale, I've not built any Hungarian subjects anyway. So certainly affected my military collecting. But no, currently, the biggest influence so far, I mean, is the Soviet Union's contribution to the war and the way they see the war.
Yes.
And the equipment and the scope of the battles. And it's fueled my interest in Soviet subjects and also German and the smaller Axis powers fighting against them, their equipment as well. So yeah, the last email, Dave.
Okay.
Always from who?
Michael Karnaka.
And it is. And this is a good one, too.
They always are. I mean, he really does. It's amazing that he continues to come up with these.
And I wonder where this comes from. I think he may have read a news article about that all-female mountain climbing team. That.
Yes.
Yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, very bad.
Summit fever.
Yep.
Modeling summit fever, derived from summit fever, that mountain climbing attempt to get to the top of Mount Everest or wherever succumbs to, often to their demise because they get sloppy to get to the goal, right?
Yes.
The goal they've worked on is so close within sight that they decide to risk it all instead of proceeding with care and careful planning.
And I have the opposite problem of this. I don't have summit fever. What I do is I get in sight of the summit, and things have gone so well up to this point that I stop and admire the view without ever actually getting to the summit, because I'm afraid that I'm going to ruin it between where I am and the summit. So I don't rush to finish when I get close. I am much more likely to simply lock up because things have gone so well and I'm afraid of messing it up. So I may be anti-summit fever. I don't know what you'd call that.
Well, I'm guilty of it to some degree, but I tell you, to his point, and to my reference, modeling's not fatal. Sometimes I will succumb to this summit fever he's talking about up until the point I make the first mistake.
Yeah.
At that point, I do not discount that mistake. I was like, let's think about this and get a good plan to get to the top. And, that's unfortunately that female team I was talking about was kind of not what they did, apparently.
Right. And much to their detriment. But
that's right.
But I'll tell you, one of the things that I think helps you combat all of this associated stuff is the realization that there's almost nothing that you can't come back from, short of dropping the model out of your hand onto the floor and having it shatter into a million pieces. Even if you do something in a, you've got summit fever, you're trying to get the model built or model finished, and you mess something up, it's almost always true that you can take a step back and fix it. And I think that realization will help people get stuff finished.
Well, that is it from the listener mail email side, Dave. What's been happening on Facebook Messenger?
It's been very active. In fact, the funny thing is I was in the car with my wife today and offhandedly realized and mentioned to her that not a day goes by where I'm not having a half dozen or more conversations with different modelers on different aspects of modeling. And that's really weird because 3 years ago or more, that didn't happen. I might be texting with you. I might be texting with Skippy or Jim, but it wasn't where I had a half dozen or more disparate conversations going on with modelers all over the planet. And it's just freaking amazing. So Grant Aztec he's building the Tamiya 72nd Scale Zero, the A6M2.
Yeah, the one you rave on and on.
That's right. It's the best model kit I have ever built.
That's right. You rave on like Buddy Holly.
Absolutely. Nice reference. And so he had asked me what books what reference that I really liked on the subject. And I pointed to him to Scale Aircraft Modeling does two combat colors books, one on the Zero, and then one on Pearl Harbor and beyond. He ordered those and apparently liked my recommendation. He got them very recently and sent me a DM to tell me how much he thought that they were indeed really good references on the subject. I had numerous modelers, Neil Gilborn out of the UK from the Lincoln Model Club, and then, of course, our friend Mark Copeland from the U.S., who's over in England for Telford, sending me photos, etc., from Telford, and it's killing me. We got to find a way to get there, man. We got to find a way. Our kids are in their late teens. We got to work that out.
It's becoming more possible as the years roll on.
Yes, that's right. Modeler by the name of Scott Wadklo, I think I'm pronouncing that correct. He had DM'd wanting to know. He picked up a couple of Edward 48 scale World War I kits and was asking about rigging, which I'm the wrong person to ask because I have avoided those subjects specifically because of the fact that if there's rigging involved. But I told him what Steve Husted uses or used on his national award-winning World War One model, talked about what some other people use with either the stretchable thread or Steve uses steel wire. Scott has just, he's gotten back into modeling during the pandemic. He had actually suffered a stroke and he found that modeling helps him in working to regain some of those skills that he lost due to the stroke, which that's a great additional benefit. I wouldn't have thought of that, but I can see how that helps. And he found our podcast because he listened to PPP, Plastic Posse Podcast, and they mentioned our podcast, and that caused him to find us and start listening to us. The synergy among all the podcasts is really helping. Michael Poland, who is a modeler who was on a European trip to Greece and Turkey and other points in the Eastern Mediterranean. He was at a restaurant eating a 16-course meal, as apparently you do in Greece and Turkey. And, of course, they had a cocktail made with peanut butter whiskey on the menu. Oh, and God. So... And this is what my life is now, and it's really fascinating.
Well, quit buying that crap if you don't want to keep. You got to wear the scarlet letter, man.
I had it one time, and I'm still hearing about it. But in any event, I'm getting a DM from halfway across the world because somebody saw peanut butter whiskey on a menu in a restaurant and thought of me. And that's just freaking awesome.
Well, he's the doctor in Knoxville who I saw in Greenville, Tennessee at that.
Oh,
show.
Okay. Well, so. He was in Europe enjoying himself on a European vacation.
Good on him.
Yeah.
quit buying stuff on a lark.
our old friend, Jim Patrick, longtime member of our model club. Jim moved away, and so we don't see him anymore at the model club. Jim was he was in the Army and did all those fun Army things. He reached out just to say, hey, long time no here, and I'm still out here, and I listen to the podcast. So it's kind of cool to...
Yeah, it is.
...to hear from people who we've known in the past in our local club or through modeling that all of a sudden reach out and say, hey, I'm out here, I'm still modeling, and I'm listening to you.
Well, we appreciate that very much.
Very much. And finally, Frank Blanton, who's in Richmond, Virginia, he reached out to remind us that the Richmond show exists and we need to come over to Richmond. I told him I need to come to Richmond, if nothing else, to drive by the old house that I used to live at. But he's getting a group of guys together to come to Wonderfest this year.
Ooh.
2024, next year, I guess. It's the next Wonderfest.
The next Wonderfest.
The next Wonderfest. So
I think Scott Gentry's wanting to come, too.
I think he is. So we may have a real gathering.
This could be a disaster.
At Wonderfest for 2024. And you and I may have to make some plans to show these people some Kentucky hospitality.
I think we should.
I think we should.
Is that all you got, Dave?
That's it. So this is the point in the episode where I ask you, if you haven't already done so, please, when you get to the end of the episode, rate us on whatever podcasting app you use. It helps us in driving the visibility of the podcast. We continue to grow, and one of the ways we continue to grow is people giving us 5-star reviews on whatever podcasting app they listen to. Also, if you have a modeling friend who doesn't listen to the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you'd recommend us, if you'd show them how to listen to a podcast. You might have to walk them through it if they're technically challenged. One of the single best ways for us to continue to grow the podcast is to have a recommendation from a current listener.
And after you've done that, please check out all the other podcasts out in the model sphere. You can do that by going to www.modelpodcast.com. That's modelpodcastplural.com. It's a consortium website set up with our help with our friend Stuart Clark from Scale Model Podcast up in Canada. If you follow that link, you'll find the banners to all the podcasts out in the model sphere who are participating with us in this spirit of cross promotion. And I'm going to mention one of them. On the bench, Dave Goldfinch and crew was just at Scale ACT down in Canberra, and their live on the scene show was really well done. It was really good. I really enjoyed that. I got one question though, Dave.
Which is?
They show these pictures, and like Dave's got on the OTB swag shirt, and Ian's got on the OTB swag shirt, and Julian's not wearing the team colors, man. Is he the goalie?
I don't know. We got to talk. We need to talk to Dave about this.
Anyway, modelpodcast.com. Check it out to get all your other podcasts in your player. In addition to the podcast, we've got a lot of blog and YouTube friends out there in the model sphere. We've got Jim Bates, Scale Canadian TV. He's got a great YouTube channel. And in fact, on this topic of productivity, Jim's got his own take on what we're doing. Coincidentally, and honestly, coincidentally, he's decided to start shooting progress update videos and posting those.
Yep.
To get his motivation going and to have something to show people. So hopefully he experiences the same success we have by trying to make sure we get to the bench a certain number of hours a day.
Yep.
Next is Stephen Lee, Sprue Pie with Frets. Great blog, long and short form. And I'm really trying to get him on as a guest here. Hopefully episode 104, which would be in here at the front of December. Or hang on for the 12-minute model sphere for December and see if that actually pans out. But we're looking to get Steve on real quick. Jeff Groves, Inch High Guys, All Things 172nd Scale blog. Chris Wallace, Model Airplane Maker, got a good blog and YouTube channel. You want to check him out? Good friend of the show. And Evan McCallum, Panzermeister 36. Please check out his YouTube channel. He's always got something going on. And we get to see his projects behind the scenes. So we know what might be coming up for Panzermeister 36.
If you're not a member of IPMS USA, IPMS Canada, IPMS Italy, whatever nation you live in, if you're not a member of the IPMS national organization in that country, please consider joining. IPMS is an umbrella organization that helps in organizing local clubs with the ability to ensure when they put on a local contest. There's a lot that the national organization does to assist in organizing the local chapters, in helping them make sure that their contests don't overlap, that two chapters don't step on each other in a similar location. If you're not a member, please join. If you're an armor modeler, you're not a member of AMPS. AMPS is a fine modeling organization, the Armor Modeling Preservation Society. They also have local chapters, put on regional shows and a national show every year. Their national show is coming up in April in South Bend, Indiana. Mike and I are planning to attend, and I hope we'll see many of you there.
Plastic Model Mojo is now brought to you by Model Paint Solutions, your source for Harder Steenbeck airbrushes, David Union power tools, and laboratory-grade mixing, measuring, and storage tools for use with all your model paints, be they acrylic, enamels, or lacquers. Check them out at www.modelpaintsolutions.com. It's All-American, Dave. Red, white, and blue.
Madison 2024.
At the time of this recording, Dave, we are 247 days away from the IPMS National Convention in Madison, Wisconsin.
Nice.
It is nice. Still, we're kind of at the front end of this. Pre-registration opens March 1st, 2024. So you want to pay attention for that if you want to pre-register. For any news going forward, nats2024.com. You can go there. That's the convention website. Keep your eye on that. Check it every week or every couple of weeks and see what's been added. And pretty soon they'll be opening up that hotel window, and you're going to want to book your rooms as soon as possible, because this is, I don't know, Dave, I tell you, a show in the Midwest like this, close to Canada, close to a lot of population centers, I think this is going to be a good one.
I think that this is going to be a extremely well-attended show, given its location and given the proximity to Canada. There are a disproportionate number of really good modelers in Canada. And for them to have the opportunity to come to a U.S. national this close to the Canadian border, I would be shocked if there was not a huge Canadian turnout. And I'm looking forward to that, because the Canadians know how to party. It's it's a good time. We're already planning our trip to Heritage Con, so kind of a preview with our Canadian friends. But the number of Canadians who are going to attend Madison, I suspect, is off the chart.
Well, I know one of our Australian friends is already committed to his travel arrangements now.
Yes. Yes, he has.
So Mr. Goldfinch shooting his mouth off about buying his plane tickets.
Well, we are nothing but thrilled to provide Kentucky hospitality to the Podfather himself. And I'm looking forward to that.
Well, Dave, our guest for this episode might just be your savior.
Yes, he is.
Your vow to not build kits for which there are no pre-cut masks has not gone unnoticed.
Yep, I suspect I am not the only one.
You're probably not. Kevin's got a little company called Kit Masks, and they're making a lot of pre-cut canopy masks for a lot of kits that don't have them.
Yes, they are.
We had a little chat with Kevin, and let's get right into that. Dave, tonight we've got a guest I think is going to be right up your alley, given that you claim to not build a kit that doesn't have a pre-cut canopy mask for it.
Absolutely.
Joining us from Canada's West Coast out in British Columbia is Mr. Kevin Hedrick from Kit Masks. Kevin, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing excellent. How are you guys doing?
We're pretty good. Can't complain.
Doing great.
Watching this year evaporate.
Yeah, it's coming up quick, isn't it?
Yeah, Kevin, do me a favor. Spell Kit Masks.
K-I-T space M-A-S-X.
Gotcha. I wanted to get that out there.
Yeah, it sounds like Kit Masks, but we just spelled it differently.
Gotcha.
No real reason, just wanted it to look different, I guess.
Well, as the title alludes to in my comments about Dave's current build habits, you found yourself in the pre-cut canopy mask business. Why don't you give us a little bit of background on your modeling journey and how you kind of arrived at this, and then we'll talk a little bit more about what you're doing.
Well, like most of everybody, I modeled when I was younger. I had planes hanging from the ceiling. Sometimes they were hanging low enough that if you weren't paying attention, you'd have a prop in the face. And, you know, getting older, cars, girls, all that stuff sort of goes by the wayside. And then I was in my 30s, right in my mid-30s, and I started to get back into it. And the first kit I went and bought to build again was a Academy 148th Bearcat. Mm-hmm. And I bought a few accessories for it, and one of the accessories was a mask set. And since then, I'm much like you, Dave. I don't really like to build a kit if I have to do manual masking.
Yep.
Yeah. And being up in Canada here, it's kind of hard locally to get any of that kind of stuff. You have to order it online or go to a swap meet or something like that.
Sure. So you're a builder who likes using kit masks. How do you make the transition from a builder who likes to use kit masks to, hey, I'm going to get into the hobby business?
It was purely by accident, really. I mean, I'm trying to build a kit, and I think to myself, I really hate doing this manually. So maybe I'll just trace it. And, you know, the vinyl cutters are getting reasonable at that point. So I just traced it. I started tracing out my tracing and used the cutter to cut it out and slowly tweak it here and there and, well, pretty much everywhere. And then used it to mask a canopy.
In your non-modeling life, what do you do for a living?
So I'm a road service technician for a forklift company.
Okay.
We mainly work on Toyota forklifts.
So you didn't have any background in 2D CAD or drawing programs or anything that would have kind of given you a leg up in going this direction?
Not really. I mean, I dabbled in it a little bit. A friend of mine bought a CNC plasma cutter. So I tried doing a little bit of that. And
that sounds fun.
That thing was a blast. The things you can make with the plasma cutter is just incredible. But not really. I didn't get into it enough to learn anything. And yeah, I'm pretty technical. I'm good with mechanical stuff. I have a couple printers, so I have a bit of experience with that. But nothing with CAD. That's a whole different animal to learn.
Obviously, you taught yourself all of that. Did you have anybody helping you, or did you just, was it your nature where you dove in and said, I need canopy masks, so I'm going to learn how to use this?
That was kind of it. I usually dive in, and when I get stuck, then I'll go look at something. Like, I'll go on YouTube something. I even do that during my J job. I can't know everything. It's impossible. So if it's something I don't know, I'll look up some videos and muddle my way through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it just happened to work out.
I do that with my home appliances a lot of times till I get.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I got to ask, what was the first one you did for yourself? What kicked this off?
The first one I did for myself was the Matchbox Heinkel HE115.
Oh, so, yes.
So I built that kit when I was younger. I loved it. I've had a soft spot for it for a long time, and I finally got another one right around the time that I decided to get into this, and that was the first one I did.
And it's perfect for it because it's got that big greenhouse.
Yeah, there's lots. The front nose section, the great big long canopy. Yeah, it's a perfect one for that.
Well, our friend Steve Husted just built one of those, and
okay, yeah,
it did an incredible job. Remind me, I'll email you a picture of that thing.
That'll be excellent.
What he did, how difficult that kit was.
Yeah, it's not hard, but it's not easy. It's pretty basic. So if you want to spruce it up a little bit, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, well, and that's what he did. Boy, you jumped into the deep end of the pool because that's...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's not, you know, a single-engine fighter with four panels or six panels or...
No, that's like 100.
Yeah, I was going to say, a freaking greenhouse with all sorts of complex... How long did it take you to get it right?
Oh, hours and... upon hours. the square parts, the triangles, no problem. It's that the Germans use that dome in the nose that rotates with the gun sticking through it.
Right.
That was, to this day, those are the hardest pieces to do. And, you know, one of those nose pieces, with cutting and testing, yeah, a couple hours, no problem.
And you're using the vinyl material, the semi-opaque vinyl material, right?
Yes, I use Oracle 810.
Okay.
So it's, and a lot of other companies, they use the Oracle products. I know Montex uses the black stuff, which is, it's not flexible.
Right.
I don't know why they keep using it.
I agree.
But the stuff that I use is a little more flexible. And then always there's Tamiya tape, which I prefer. But Tamiya tape cutting out on the vinyl cutter tends to lift off when you get really small pieces. It's really finicky.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Well, the Oracle 810 seems to be, if you go into the, and I'm just dipping my toe into all of this, seems to be the consensus product for canopy masks. because it's not, like you said, the Montex uses the black, which is much stiffer. And the 810 is kind of a semi-opaque light gray.
Yeah.
And it really does conform around even the smallest of 72nd scale canopies.
Yeah, it's a good happy medium between sticky and flexible. And, if you can put it over paint, too, and it doesn't usually lift up the paint.
Right.
So I'll ask, is 72nd scale your preferred scale?
When I got back into modeling, when I was younger, 72nd was my favorite. When I got back into it years later, I started to lean towards 48th. But I find more of my interests tend to be catered to by the 72nd scale airplanes. So I probably into 72nd.
Yeah, 48 scale HE-115 would be a big model.
Yeah, it's a big plane. Especially if you go into the Zwilling version.
Right, yeah. Oh, now that leads to a next question. So you're building the HE-115. You say, the heck with it. I'm going to teach myself and make a mask set for this because I don't want to mask it all manually by hand.
Right.
When was the first time you did a mask set for somebody else?
So as right around the time I started doing it in the 115, I sort of made friends with a guy named Victor. He'll know who I'm talking about if he listens to this podcast. I'm not even going to attempt his last name, but he's up in Montreal. He does a lot of selling on Scale Model Graveyard.
Gotcha.
So I bought a few things from him. We sort of struck up a friendship, and I happened to mention that I had a vinyl cutter, and he got all interested, and a few direct messages here and there. And I sent him the HE-115. And the next thing I know, I get a box in the mail with, there must have been about 12 canopies in there, and said, do your thing. Let me know when they're done. Send them out. So I sent them all to him. And by that time, after doing his stuff, I started selling them on the graveyard without a website.
Gotcha.
And then I got to the point where I thought I had enough products that I would start up a website. And so that's what happened. And it's been, I want to say, almost 3 years with the website now.
You have a really nice website, and you said it was done by your lovely better half?
My wife did that, yes.
For a cottage industry a website, it's a really intuitive, easy to use, very attractive website where it's easy to find what you're looking for.
Yeah, so she's been on modeling websites looking for me for Christmas gifts, birthday gifts. And every time she is, I hear about it.
This is what not to do.
Yeah, she's just like, I wanted to get you this, but I'm sorry. I could not find anything in that website. So here's the money. You do your thing. So when we discussed the website, she said, I'll do it. And, it'll be clear and concise. I did have a little input on like what to call things.
Yeah.
But that whole website was her.
A beautiful website. I mean, it is well done for, you don't expect to find even among more commercial manufacturers. I've seen plenty of commercial manufacturers who don't have that nice a website.
Well, she'll be happy to hear that. Yeah. I quite enjoy the website. I'm just happy what she did. I'm very proud of her for that, for sure.
Well, how many sets are you up to now, as of today?
Oh, geez. I think as 144th, I think I have six. Same with 32nd. 72nd, I'm up to, I think, 107. And then 48th, I just did, I think, number 67. Not all of them are on the website yet. They're kind of in the middle of getting product cards built up for them. But I do have about two or three dozen canopies in boxes in a stack that are waiting to be done.
Well, that leads me to my next question. And I know from looking at your website, but it seems like the area that you're concentrating on are older kits that are less served by the other mask manufacturers, because they tend to release, when a new kit comes out, they tend to release a mask set for it. But nobody's doing the DO18 from Matchbox from, you know, 70s, 80s kit, still the only one available in 72nd scale for the aircraft, but you've got it. And I'm not sure anybody else does.
No, I don't think so. There's a few that I have and nobody else has even touched. I don't know what they are off the top of my head. But also some of the other manufacturers like Edward, they do the they do runs of stuff.
Right.
And then once they're gone, they don't manufacture them anymore. So that's where I kind of, I mean, you know, the old kits need love too. I wanted to cater to people who wanted to build those old things that hate masking as much as I do and you do.
Yeah.
So I guess that's kind of where I found my niche.
One thing you mentioned there that is, I think, really important is you're right. The major mask manufacturers do runs. And
exactly, yeah.
If you don't get it when it comes out, 5 years later, you may not be able to get it.
Yeah.
Yours are cut to order. So when somebody places an order, you cut it, send it out. So it's your stuff in theory never goes, quote unquote, out of stock.
Right. So exactly. I'm the manufacturer and I don't have a bunch of fancy dies in this great big machine. I do it with computers. And like you said, anything on my site, if anybody sees it and it says it's out of stock, order it anyway, because we probably just didn't get to refreshing the numbers. Everything's in stock. It doesn't matter what's on the site at this point.
Gotcha. So even if it's something you don't have that you've already cut and is sitting in your inventory, it's something that if somebody orders, you can get it cut in a relatively short, a week's period of time.
Oh, easily. Yeah. Yeah. I just pull up the file, hit cut, and
gotcha.
You'll have your mask in a couple, 3 weeks, depending on the post office.
Gotcha. speaking of which, you're in Canada. How's the postal situation?
It was really bad. It's still not the greatest. You know, all that stuff with COVID and they couldn't find people to work. I mean, it's still like that to a point, but it's much better than it was. Prices keep going up, but I have a membership to Canada Post or whatever you want to call it, business plan. So some of the shipping goes down a little bit for a little while and then it goes back up, but I don't get a lot of stuff undelivered or returned to me in the mail. Let's put it this way. If you order something from me, you're going to get it. You don't have to pay the extra shipping unless you need it right away. I don't care if the post office loses it. I don't care if it's in your hand and the dog takes it. If you paid for it, you're going to get it one way or another. And you're going to be looked after.
That's good customer service. Well, the nice thing is that what you're shipping are flat, something that fits in an envelope, as opposed to something that you have to box up. My understanding is that people in the industry, particularly in Canada, who are shipping boxes, it gets really slow and expensive.
It does. It definitely does. But I noticed that when you guys ship stuff up to here, it's pretty much the same cost when you factor in
the exchange
currency.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's about the same. And it puts off a lot of purchases from hobby shops. I mean, sometimes I hit check the cart and it's like $50 shipping. I'm like, oh, I don't know if I need it that bad.
Yeah. I've been there.
Yeah. So I'm lucky because right now I send it a certain way. I don't want to say anything in case it gets back to Canada Post. But it's inexpensive enough that I can offer free shipping with minimal amount of purchases.
Gotcha. You said that you've been doing it about 3 years now?
Yeah.
Now, this business obviously at some point just took off. You mentioned earlier that you kind of accidentally fell into the business.
Yeah, more or less.
At what point did it just take off?
I'd say in the last year.
Okay.
The first year, it wasn't even a drop in a bucket. I mean, you couldn't even buy a Wingnut Wings kit with the money I made with it. But, I mean, it's not bad now. I'm not getting rich. I sure. can't quit my day job anytime soon. But, I mean, it's going up and up and up. So at some point, I think I'm going to have to expand to get into something else if I want to make this my full-time job.
Well, so has your hobby suffered from the fact that you're doing more and more business?
It has. I don't have time to build anymore. We have a bunch of stuff coming out that I promised people, and then people keep sending me canopies, which is great. I love it. And it's just, you know, I look at all these kits these guys build and I think, oh man, I got to get back to doing it. And then I look over to my left and there's a pile of canopies. I'm like, yeah, not today.
Well, is that how you get most of you're not pulling them out of the stash from your stash. People are actually sending you canopies and saying, I need this one.
At the beginning, it was a lot of my stuff.
Gotcha.
Except for the boxes that Victor sent me. And it was sort of slow for a little while, so I just kept pulling stuff out of my stash. And then I think in the last year, it's been all customer stuff. I mean, I don't have a big stash by any means, but out of my, say, 150 kits, I think maybe 30 of them have masks.
Gotcha.
So if it slows down with customers sending in their stuff, I have lots of material to work with.
Okay, so what was the most rare or unusual request that you've gotten? Kit, canopy request.
Oh, geez. I think it was some of the Huma kits that they made stuff for. And I'm thinking, because every time I look for one of those, good luck.
Yes.
And people want big bucks for them, like the JU-287, for example.
Yep. And, I have that in my stash.
Yeah, well, there you go. Victor sent me that. I'm thinking, I'll do it because I said I would, and I don't mind doing it, but I don't think I'm going to sell any.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you figure that's been a consistent seller every time I've done it. It just blows me away because you never see those kits around. You never see any of them made.
Right, but that's because people all have them in their stash.
Masks.
They've been waiting for the guy to make the masks for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Huma probably needs more than just canopy masks.
Okay. Yeah, I don't have any shares in Putty yet.
So. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So how does your customer request system work?
So basically what I decided early on was I need to get more masks. I cannot afford to buy every single kit that I want or else I would be divorced and I would be living in a warehouse with kits.
Right.
So I figured, okay, well, if people, it circles back to Victor again. Victor sent me this stuff. And when I got it, I said, okay, I'll make all these mask sets for you and I'll send them back to you. And he asked me how much. And I, in good conscience, I couldn't say, okay, well, you know, $5-$10 a piece or whatever. So I just said, don't worry about it. And that got the ball rolling thinking, well, if he's willing to do that, other people might. I can cater to stuff that doesn't have masks and they send me their parts. I don't have to buy the kit. They get free masks, whatever they want for two or three, or say they got four of their kits in their stash. I'll send you a mask for four of that one. And I add them to my inventory. So it's kind of a win-win for everybody.
What's been your most surprising bestseller? What's been the most popular mask set you did?
It's funny. It goes in stages. 1 week I'll have some obscure kit that I've never sold any, and then I get three or four orders for the same bloody kit.
Huh.
I don't know what goes on with that. But consistently, I think the Monogram B36.
Oh, yeah.
That one, I always sell lots of those. The Accurate Miniatures Avenger.
Mm-hmm.
I sell a lot of those.
I can see that one being very popular.
Yeah. And I'd have to go through my history, but there's a few that keep coming up. Recently, the Tamiya DO335 has been moving pretty good.
Yeah, great choice. So,
but it's weird. It seems to go in cycles.
Well, I suspect what happens is there's a conversation out on the internet web somewhere between people interested in this aircraft, and somebody discovers you have a mask for it, and then everybody involved in that conversation starts hitting you up for canopy masks.
Yeah, been there, done that.
Yeah.
Now, again, you kind of accidentally fell into this business, and you are where you are now. Are you actually trying to plan out the future, or are you just kind of riding the wave to see where it goes and it'll go wherever it'll take you, or without giving away any secrets or anything?
Yeah. What's I wish I had secrets to give away right now.
I hear you. So is there any plan for the future other than make more, sell more?
Right now I'm so buried in masks that the plan is to make more, sell more.
Gotcha.
I frequently talk with my wife about what we can do to sort of branch out. My next step is I have access to a laser cutter.
Yeah.
I want to try to get that working. Then I can offer some of the Tamiya stuff with the really small parts. And then I have considered getting a vac forming machine and making some vac canopies.
Yeah.
So I was really interested in your last podcast there. I heard with Steve.
Steve would love for you to do that.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Steve's not the only one. I would love for you to do that. And
I'm really tempted to start. Unfortunately, I'm so busy that I don't have the time to step away from the masks unless lose a job and I know which one that's going to be.
Well, we got to keep the wife happy. So there's none of that. But you definitely, if you end up getting into that area with vac form canopies.
Yeah.
You need to talk to Steve because he really knows his stuff there.
And
there are a lot of, just like with canopy masks, there are a lot of holes to fill in the vac form canopy world.
Yeah, that's something I'm going to have to do a lot of research on because I don't want to start making vac canopies that, while some people may use them, I mean, the ideal goal is to make some money doing it and at the same time look after what everybody wants.
Sure, sure. But that's a great adjacent business for you, given
goes hand in hand.
Yeah, you could sell them together as sets. That really makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. On the subject of Steve, he will be happy to know that I have several boxes of Falcon canopies, vac canopies.
Yeah.
That I am there on the schedule. I think in January or February that I'm going to start making complete mass sets for all those vacuum form canopies.
Oh, there you go.
For any sets that you don't have, let me know because I've got several sets myself and I would be more than happy to send them up your way for prototyping.
Right. Yeah, because the vac sets they're usually nowhere close to the kit parts.
Right.
You can't even adapt them sometimes. They're just, it's ridiculous.
So the reception out with the modeling community has been good, I assume.
It's been excellent. I actually kind of embarrassed to admit it, considering I've been back into this hobby for a long time. But in September, we went to our, it was my first, hence my wife's first, modeling show. We went to the modeling show in Vancouver, BC, in September, and we got a really good reception there.
Yeah.
I actually gained quite a few people, like a bunch of these boxes actually that are sitting on my desk are from that show. And we took some samples out. And
I suspect that if you went to Heritage Con and brought your wares, and I suspect that it would be extremely popular.
Yeah, I might have to go with more samples than I went to with Vancouver.
Well, the nice thing is you can again, talking about mailing them, canopy masks are pretty transportable. So
yes.
you can fill one suitcase and exactly. have a lot of product.
Yes, quite a bit. Quite a bit. I can almost take one of everything.
There you go.
So we also do masks for markings as well. So we're trying to branch out into that as well as camouflage masks and whatnot.
Yeah, that's another natural area for
right.
branching out. Are you starting with national markings or code letters or what have you in that arena? What have you started with?
So far, I've done both.
Okay.
If people want markings, that's actually really easy. They just have to scan me their decal sheet, and I can usually work off of the decal sheet. There are size limitations. I mean, sure. It's really hard to print a letter or a number or something that's legible in 2 millimeters.
Right.
But as far as national markings, code letters, stuff like that, it's really easy to work off a decal sheet. You don't have to send me anything. It actually takes me less time because I don't have to cut it out, test fit it.
Right. Well, and not only that, but I'll tell you the advantage of masked and painted on markings and codes as opposed to ones applied with decal. Just there's so much more you can do with something that is painted onto the model.
Oh, yeah. Just it's way, way better. It well, it's real. I mean,
yeah, exactly. It's how they did it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of focus going that way, especially in the larger scales.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had I can't remember the name of the company. He's out of Europe somewhere, but his are all 32nd scale masks.
Right.
Oh, yes. Right.
Is that one man army guy?
Oh, yeah. One man army. That's right.
One man army.
Yeah, I've been looking at his stuff thinking, oh, man, I got to do that. I'm pretty sure he's using a laser cutter, so I really got to get the one that I have going.
And we had some interaction with him, and he sent us a few products just to look at and to give away to the listeners. Nice. And I will tell you, his stuff is beautiful. I mean, wow. Really, really very well done.
Yeah, I saw a build somebody did of a Lancaster with his masks. And all the stencils are all painted on. It looked absolutely phenomenal.
Yep. And again, you can't beat actually painting it on the model.
No, it's so much easier to weather it and, you know, rub a little bit of paint off and mm-hmm. looks a little faded. Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Have you got any tips and tricks for using your masks? I mean, I'm sure they're not totally different than some that are out there already, but just generally for folks who maybe never used.
The one thing I will say, if you're going to buy a mask set and you're going to use it right away, you don't have to splurge on Tamiya unless you really like it, but vinyl will do the job perfect. If you're going to buy a few masks and just leave them sit on the shelf for a little while, Tamiya is better because we all know that vinyl tends to shrink a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't make a huge difference, but I mean, if you're building a model for a show, you might notice a little bit of stuff that you're gonna have to clean up. And if you're gonna use them for painting on surfaces, grab a test subject and just make sure that whatever paint you're using doesn't react with the adhesive on the mask. Other than that, make sure you have some masking fluid.
Yeah, touch up the corners or touch up an area that, where you need that.
Yeah.
Some they're designed that way, right? Yeah. I just used a mask from Dead Designs, I think.
Yep.
On a Fujimi E16 Paul, and it's this plane like a lot have the shaped glass above the bulletproof windscreen.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Above the pilot's head, so the mask is just the like a millimeter or two in from the frame edge into the window. And the middle's hollow. It has to be filled up with either smaller bits of tape or masking fluid.
Right. Because it's a compound curve, you can't make a mask that would fit in all directions. So what they do is they do that in one or two parts where it's just the edges, and then you fill in the center. That's the F8 that I've got, the Crusader. That is exactly how the mask is for the main canopy.
Now, I don't know with the method you're using to cut these, if it's possible, but as a suggestion for that type of mask, because the problem with sharp inside corners manifested itself on my little tiny perimeter mask, I'll call it, because that's where they tear.
Yep.
If you have a sharp corner on the inside, that's where they're going to tear. And I wonder how much of a radius could actually be put in there before either it wouldn't cut it or you've made it to where it won't conform anymore.
Surprisingly, you can get that radius quite small. I've been incorporating those more into there as much as I can. And I've actually, some of my masks, even if it's a square piece, some of those masks, like on a little PZL 23 I did by IBG.
Yep.
It had a rectangular window, but or side glass, but it wrapped up over the top just a little bit.
Yeah.
And I cut out a full piece, put it on there, and the edge kept on lifting up. And I was like, this is really irritating. If I don't like this, somebody else is going to be going berserk that they bought my masks. So basically what I did is, even though it's a square piece, it's not compound curve or anything, I just cut out a section where the mask actually bends so that the top piece would still adhere, and then so it doesn't lift it up. You only have two little small pieces on the side which are offering resistance to bring it back up. So then you just put a little bit of masking fluid in there and it doesn't lift up.
Gotcha. So
I've been trying to incorporate things where I hate the mask lifting up. I it just drives everybody crazy. So
that's probably universal.
Yeah. And then and Montex again, I don't mean to single them out, but a lot of their masks, they have these little slits in them, so you don't have to use masking fluid, I guess, but they just always lift up there.
Yeah.
So I between stay away from that.
Right. Between the thickness of the material and the fact that, no matter what you do as far as putting a slit in it, it causes that lift.
Yeah.
Or makes it much more likely. That's the way you should, put it. Yeah,
for sure. So anything I can do to make it easier for everybody, I'm all for it.
That was an excellent observation as a businessman to think that if this is driving me nuts, there's no way I can pull this off on the modeling community. That's
No, there is no way. I mean, we've all bought something, we've looked at it and thought,
there's no way they built this.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the last thing you want is the angry email.
This went from the injection mold press to the box first time.
Yeah.
They never put it together.
No, it never crossed anybody's desk.
Now, you've got a beautiful website, thanks to your better half.
Mm-hmm.
Are you selling any of these to direct to hobby shops for stocking, or are you purely a direct-to-consumer business?
Right now, I'm direct-to-consumer. I don't really have a wholesale price sheet.
Right.
I've never really dabbled in retail. I don't know what their margins are like.
Mm-hmm.
If I discount it too much, I'm basically giving it away for free.
Gotcha.
So I have to kind of work through that, and I'll probably be working through that with Ian McCauley and the hobby shop that he works with.
Yeah.
I just met Ian about a month ago when we went out to the museums out there and took his took the hobby shop owner some samples.
Ian is A, a good guy, and B,
Ian's just, awesome.
Okay, the problem is he's going to hear this recording. And,
yes, he will.
He's going to get the big head, but that's all right. Ian's a good guy. He just retired and is working at a hobby shop, and that has given him great insight into the retail side of the business. So you would do well to work with him as far as figuring out if you're going to sell as a wholesaler to hobby shops, how you go about doing that.
Yeah, and I'm going to be picking his brain on that for sure.
Well, Kevin, before we wrap up, is there anything else you'd like to say or make us aware of?
I am going to provide your listeners with a discount code when your episode drops for the weekend. So if you type in Mojo, M-O-J-O, 20, everybody that's listening will get a discount code, 20% off for the whole store. Use it as many times as you like, buy as much as you want. Buy one thing, doesn't matter. And that'll go on from, I think you said this was going to drop on Friday.
It's going to drop on Friday.
So Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And then shortly after that, we're going to have a Black Friday sale. So use the code. If you don't use it, come back Black Friday and there'll be another sale then.
Well, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. Expect an order because I've looked at your website. And again, I will not build a kit unless there's a mask available for it. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, if you have requests, just send me a list. I might have some of the stuff in my stash, so you don't have to send anything, hopefully.
Well, and in addition, like I said, if there are any of those Falcon sets that you don't have that you need, let me know, because I would be more than thrilled to provide the ones that I've got.
Okay, well, that sounds excellent. I think I have about 30 boxes so far. So, yeah, I'm on my way. That'll keep me busy for a couple of years at least.
We'll keep you going.
Yeah, oh yeah, it's going to be busy. Going to have to stop working on forklifts soon.
Kevin, we thank you for joining us on Plastic Model Mojo.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Wish you all the success getting out from under the burden of the onslaught of orders from, just Ian talking about it on that one episode. And then hopefully don't drown you with this one, but wish you all the success.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah. I don't mind at all. I actually find making the mask a little bit relaxing, so.
There you go.
It's almost as good as modeling.
Well, that's a good attitude to keep it going. Thanks again. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you again.
Well, Kevin and Kit Mass sound like they're pretty stinking busy, Dave.
Yes, he does. Sounds like it's taken over his life, but he's doing the Lord's work, man. He's providing, filling holes, and again, making it possible for modelers to build a model that they otherwise wouldn't because there's no mask available.
So I got to ask.
Yeah.
Crappy kit, but now you got a mask. Still no build?
Okay. Yes and no.
Yeah, because there's some only game in towns in there.
That's what I was going to say. If it is the only game in town and I really want to have it, an example of this, the Matchbox HE-115, which is a kit that I know dates back into the 70s.
And sucks.
Let's put it this way. It's challenging. If you want to do an HE-115, that's pretty much your only choice. If that's on my bucket list and that's a thing that I've got to have in my case, yeah, those kit masks may be the thing that pushes me over the edge.
I mean, it's molded in three colors. Why you don't even have to paint it?
Okay, thank you.
Dave, we've made it to the Benchtop Halftime Report, and I'm really excited about this one.
You and me both, because we've actually got stuff to talk about.
That's right. This little time commitment challenge has paid some serious dividends.
Needles were moved.
Well, tell us about your move needles, Dave. What's going on?
Everybody knows the two projects that are top of the priority list. I've got the F8, which I managed because of my commitment this week and you holding me accountable to that commitment.
That's right.
I managed to get the fuselage completely painted, the some masking and detail painting done to the point where decal, there's gloss coat to go on it, and decals are going on. And the decals are already on the wings, and once that's done, then it's a glide path to the finish line. So that one, that's one of those ones. There wasn't really a lot to do. It was more a mental block where I found reasons to do something else. Part of the commitment was actual modeling, not just sitting at your bench staring at something. And that moved forward. The other one is the LCV or the LCM3 that I'm building for the Septemberist group build for Madison. This has turned out to be a really, really fun build. I did not expect to enjoy it.
You need to decline the next group build opportunity because
yes,
not,
I do.
It's not going to measure up.
Yeah, you're probably right. It isn't. But this one's been good. Again, I was slow walking because of the fact that there were basically some photo etch that I had to do. This kit, I've probably done more photo etch on this kit than I have in any kit in, I'd bet, the last 5-7 years. And I was kind of hesitant to it, again, because I think those skills were either non-existent or they had atrophied, but
or they weren't fun to learn.
Or they weren't fun to learn or relearn. But it caused me to have to go ahead again because I had made a commitment that I had to move it forward. I had to model. And since those were the next steps, I couldn't put them off anymore. So the LCM is basically done. I've got to, as far as construction goes, I've got to add, there are a couple of little weld beads that I want to restore / extend. Once I've done that, it's primer, paint, and then weathering, which I'm really looking forward to on this model because these things weathered. They got weathered and banged up and all, and I've got some really great reference photos. So I'm looking forward to taking the opportunity to play with the weathering and experiment. And again, it's on something that is outside of my comfort zone, outside of my box. So in experimenting on it, you know, whatever happens, happens. And there's a certain freedom to that. So that's where I am. I made progress, significant progress on both the F8 and the LCM. And I suspect that this week is going to be more of that. I will post photos on the dojo. And while I doubt either one of them is going to be completely finished in the next 7 days, they're going to be significantly closer than they have been for the last probably couple of months. So what's your bench been doing, as if I didn't know?
Killing it, man.
This worked out well.
So I've got 3 projects on the bench, and I moved the needle on all of them, which that in itself is unheard of.
Yes.
I'm pretty much a serial builder in my past. So this parallel build stuff, I don't know. It's not as scary as it used to be.
Well, it has its pros and cons.
But, you know, I'm doing it. I used to not do it. I never did it.
Yep.
I would try and it would go south and I would quit. So this is uncharted waters, but it's going well. So the one closest to being done that I need to get done is the E-16 Paul, my 72nd scale airplane project. Since we started a little time commitment challenge, I've got the canopy masked. And once I have all the underpainting completed on the airplane, you know, the airframe, I'll actually glue this on and then start the real painting. So that was a chore. I mean, that thing's got a lot of windows.
Yes. Canopy masking a greenhouse canopy is a challenge even for an experienced aircraft modeler. For somebody who is basically doing their first aircraft in what, 20 years?
Yeah, I probably painted the last canopy by hand.
Yeah.
With no masks and look like shit.
It is a huge challenge. So bravo for getting it masked. That in and of itself is a big step.
So as of this recording session, I've got the rear section. So to give a little context, most of the canopy is the armored windscreen and, right. and the rest of the windscreen and the pilot's covered canopy in the fixed midsection. And then the retractable parts of the gunner radio operator's canopy push forward toward the pilot. That section is one piece.
Yeah.
So I've got all that masked. And then today, just this afternoon, I got the rear section that's also fixed to the, well, no, it's not. It's not fixed, but
right.
I got it cleaned up. I got it future dipped and it's ready to be masked. So that will be done. So on that project, what I've got to do next is paint the colors at the canopy frames on the fuselage that I want and glue the stinking thing on. Finish up the masking because once they're installed, there's going to be some open ends to the canopy. And then the gunner's section will be exposed. So I got to cover that up. And then I'm ready to start painting this thing, man.
And that's where the fun really begins.
So in addition to that, I've got the Musaru Cup build, the ICM Ural truck.
You made a huge amount of progress on that thing.
Well, yeah, they ought to call it the urinal truck.
The urinal truck.
So the assembly is complete, like you just mentioned. I tell you, it sounds like it's a unanimous opinion that the kit quality leaves a little something to be desired.
And keep in mind that this thing's being built by at least one representative of all the podcasts, and there are some really good modelers who are building this thing. So if you get a unanimous opinion of all of them that this kit has challenges, so shall we say, or deficiencies or whatever, I think you can take that to the bank.
One of the points of complaint has been the black plastic in the kit.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know what they use to pigment it black, but it makes an absolute mess. And it doesn't glue all that well either.
Yeah.
And I figured once I got to the gray parts that things would get better. But surprisingly, whatever's in those black parts, it mutes the effects of the liquid cement. To some degree. And I'm a little facetious here, but when I first put the Tamiya Extra Thin on the gray parts,
yeah,
oh my God, it's like turns it to mush. Anyway, the plastic's weird. Plastic's kind of gross, but I've got the assembly complete. It's ready for paint. It's all in sub-assemblies. You know, there's a few more things to do, but I'm not going to disclose that. Like I put on Goldfinch's Musaru Cup build page, the photo of the sub-assemblies of the basic kit build, yeah, you're not seeing it again until the full reveal to the Hamilton chapter.
Yeah, I like where you're going.
So stay tuned, folks. Also on the bench is my KV85, which I've talked about a little bit. I 3D printed a turret ring adapter. The kit came with a turret ring, but I think it was probably made for the ICM kit.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't fit the Bronco kit. And this has been maybe I'm overthinking it. The interface to the turret ring and the Bronco turret race on the hull, you can't see what's happening there because once you put it down, you can't see where it's touching, what the points of contact are, what the datums are, what the references are. And so what I've done is I printed a turret ring that basically set the turret ring to flush with the hull because I can't see what's going on under there. So I kind of did trial and error until I got it where I wanted it. And now I've had to actually shim it back up a little bit to get it where I wanted it. It's a dual aftermarket kind of project. I've got the Bronco base kit and I've replaced the turret with this A resin turret. That's the brand A resin, really beautiful aftermarket turret for actually it's marketed as an IS-1 turret, which is kind of the same thing as a KV-85 turret. But I didn't like the mantlet for that kit because it was based on a specific, photograph for an IS-1 prototype.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't look like the series production mantlet for a KV-85. Highly similar, but it was not the same. So I went out and bought the PanzerArt KV-85 mantlet and aluminum gun barrel. So now I'm merging aftermarket to aftermarket. So you can imagine how that's going.
the thing that you've done with the KV85 that I found most interesting, you haven't mentioned yet.
Well, let's keep going.
The painting of the interior of the
We'll turret. Get to that. Hang on.
Okay.
So this PanzerArt gun mantlet and turret, they were probably made for like the ICM kit or the Bronco kit directly.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really fit my aftermarket turret very well. So I've had to add some spacers and shims and some sanding and back and forth and back and forth to get that thing to fit the way I wanted it to.
Mm-hmm.
And oddly, the PanzerArt mantlet, they had the flame cut marks on one edge of the mantlet, but they didn't do it on the other side.
Hmm.
And I sent them an email. Of course, I got no response. But I thought that was weird.
That is.
So I got the flame cut texture using a hobby knife and scribers and needle and a pin vise, right, and all that. I got that to kind of match the other side. I got it shimmed, and I've actually got it glued to the nose of the turret now. So that's all done. Another adventure I tried to go down was I wanted to solder up the grab irons for the turret out of brass. And the first thing I tried was to wrap a piece of like Tamiya tape around the turret.
Right.
Under the mounting points that were already molded into this resin aftermarket turret, and put a pencil mark and then lay it out flat. And that should be my template, right?
Yep.
Well, the problem is the back corners of the turret, it's at an angle. So the radius of the corner at high up on the turret is smaller than like lower down on the turret. So my masking tape was kind of kinking, and I kept trying to do that. And every time I'd lay it out flat and set up my soldering, I just kept missing the position of the standoff for the grab iron right after that corner.
Mm-hmm.
And man, I punted. I was like, man, this isn't working.
So, well, how many attempts did you make before you?
It was three or four, and it took so long to set each one of them up. I was like, this is not fun.
Right.
So I drilled the holes. The pilot holes were already on the turret. So I finished drilling those through, and I put some standoffs in there in styrene. And I used a spacer to cut them off all at the same height. And I actually used a piece of styrene rod to glue those up, and they came out really well.
Oh, it looked beautiful.
Yeah. So that problem's been tackled. So far after that, it's been just populating the turret details. And like you said, I've painted the turret interior. I've painted it twice now. I'm using it's called Black 2.0, and it's been superseded by Black 3.0 or 4.0 or something at this point. But it's an acrylic paint, these super black paints.
Yeah.
That have the really low reflectivity. I've used this on the interior of the turret. And then once I drilled the holes for the grab irons all the way through the turret, I got dust in there, and there's no cleaning that paint up. There's no restoring that finish once you foul it up.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone back now and now I've got the holes drilled and painted that color again. And it, man, that stuff, as you would expect, it's really, really black.
The photos you posted to the dojo, I am amazed at what a light sink it is and I think this will probably be, now obviously the paint's pretty expensive, but I would not be surprised to see more and more armor modelers who are building tanks, armored fighting vehicles, where they want to have a hatch open and a figure in it, but they don't have any interior.
Exactly. That's what I'm doing.
Is paint this thing with this stuff, and there is zero chance that you're going to get any reflection that makes clear that there's not an interior in there.
And you made a good point. This stuff is expensive, but it comes in 2, 3, 4 ounce. It's a pretty big bottle.
Oh, yeah. It will last. Once you buy it, it's going to last you quite a while.
And the stuff is like a little thinner than toothpaste.
Mm-hmm.
It's like an acrylic hobby paint or craft paint,
right?
Like that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to thin the crap out of it to spray it. So,
right.
A little bit would go a long way. I think you could amortize a bottle of this out over 3 or 4 people and come out okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting.
It is really amazing as to how non-reflective it is.
So, you know, I think it's only going to get better for me once I've got the cupola in place and then the loader's hatch. And then what I did was I put a patch of styrene under the turret ring of the upper hull, and I'll paint that with this stuff too. So once the turret's on, it should be a black hole.
Right.
which is exactly what I want.
Yep.
Well, that's my bench, Dave. So how many hours are we shooting for this week, man?
I'm shooting for 8 because, again, domestic harmony requires that I can't just come down into the basement every night and get away with it. There are other things that need to be done. So I'm not sure. I committed to 10 last time and I got 13 and a half. This time I'm going to commit to 8 and I'm going to hope that it comes out 10. And if it does, the LCM will be in primer, if not paint, and the F8 will be in decals.
There you go again, setting progress goals.
Yeah, I'm not trying to, but I'm just saying that's the natural result of putting that many hours in.
I signed up for 14 this past week and got damn near 20.
Yes.
I'm going to go for 10 this week because I know I got some roadblocks along the way, and we'll see what happens, man.
Yep. We'll report again in 2 weeks.
Well, no, we'll report every day because all this is going up on the dojo.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, you're right.
So if you want to follow along, go to Facebook and join the Plastic Model Dojo. And in addition to our stuff, please post your own work and your own progress shots. We want to see it.
Yep. Post both your in progress and your completed builds. Also, if you go to a contest, take pictures there and post those to the dojo, because not everybody can get to every contest. We want to live vicariously through you all. Please post photos if you attend a contest so that we can see the great work that other people are putting on the tables. Mike, new stuff's being announced, and good new stuff. To the point that for faves and yawns, I've got nothing but faves this time. How about you?
I've got nothing but faves as well.
I'm amazed. This is great. So go ahead. Give me your first fave.
TACOM has released a suite of Tiger One kits. They've got a Tiger One mid-production, a Tiger One late production, and a Tiger One mid-production with a 16th scale Auto Carius figure included. What the world needs now is another brand's Tiger, like I need a hole in my head. But these are Zimmerit molded on kits.
Right.
And they will prove popular.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And keep in mind, a Tiger One kit not made by TACOM doesn't make TACOM any money. So you understand why, even if there are 4 or 5 or 6 or whatever other Tiger One kits, why a company might release their own.
What you got?
Well, my first one is Flyhawk.
Yep.
Is releasing a T-34-85 in 72nd scale.
Yeah, it looks nice.
The Flyhawk stuff is incredible. Everybody I know who has built them is just super impressed by what Flyhawk has done, be it a ship kit or a Dauntless in 72nd scale, or they've got an amazing little FT-17. They're hitting home runs each and every time. Now they've announced a T-34. They're starting with the T-34-85. I am hopeful that this means they're going to do an entire T-34 series in 72nd scale. And that level of quality in 72nd scale for an entire T-34 series, that is what we need. So I am super jazzed about it.
I'll probably get that one.
The 85 is not my favorite. I'll get that one. They're batting 1,000 so far.
Well, my next one, I tell you, I hope Digger Dave's been keeping up with Scalemates.
Okay.
Because there's a bunch of Aussie stuff that's been.
Yes.
I don't know if it's coincidence or all these folks are in cahoots or what, but if you like Aussie stuff, Call Sign Models.
Uh-huh.
Has 2 Aussie soldiers from the Vietnam era.
Right.
As a available, I think, individually and as a pair.
Yeah.
In addition to that, the ubiquitous Aussie bush hat that you see those soldiers wearing all the time.
Yeah.
Are offered as an accessory, as a separate item.
The Aussies were in Vietnam.
And nobody knows it.
Them and the South Koreans were both there, and nobody seems to know it. And it is a part of history of that war that deserves more attention. And I'm happy to see anything that popularizes or spreads the word about the Aussie contribution to the war in Vietnam.
Well, Call Signs isn't the only one.
Oh, really?
Firestorm Models has, they've got a, this is not Vietnam era, but it's a British or Aussie tanker from the World War II Western Desert campaigns.
Nice.
So another figure that's used for the Aussie modeler.
Yeah.
Five decal sets from Firestorm from various World War II and Vietnam era Aussie and New Zealand vehicles.
You wonder if this is all driven by On the Bench and their popularity.
It could be, but Firestorm's not the end of it either, Dave.
Okay.
Arms Corps Models. They got some 3D stuff. They've got RAAC fittings for Ming's Leopard 1A3 to build an Aussie Leopard.
Oh, cool.
There you go. Aussie modelers are getting...
They're getting the love.
They're getting the love, man.
That's fantastic. My next fave is our friends at Airfix, right ahead of Telford, announced that they are surprise release of an ME410 in 72nd scale. Now, the ME410 is kind of it's a cool looking aircraft. It's kind of overlooked historically. There are two decent kits of the 410 already, one by Italeri and one by Fine Molds. I've got to say, again, this is what I've said about Airfix all along. Their stuff is value for money, some of the best kits out there. So even though there are other 72nd scale 410 choices, I predict this one is going to be a very good seller. So I'm happy to see it.
Well, it's an interesting airplane with interesting history.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Another too little, too late.
Yep.
You know, the precursor aircraft that was the 210.
Right.
Had some problems.
Right. Lateral stability issues. Yeah,
I think the 410 fixed all that.
It did by lengthening the fuselage and increasing the size of the control surfaces.
And the armaments were fairly advanced for the development at that time. So cool plane. We'll soon learn how it compares to the Fine Molds. Price delta is going to be large.
Oh God, yes. That alone, even if the Fine Molds kits remain superior, and I don't know that it is, but even if it were, the fact that the Airfix kit is going to be priced so significantly less is going to attract a large number of people who want to build this kit but don't have either the resources or the ability to acquire the Fine Molds kit, which, by the way, I don't know if it's still in production.
You probably got one, though.
I do.
My next one is TACOM again.
Okay.
They're Yog Panther G1.
Okay. I love the Yog Panther.
This is the early one.
Right.
With the kind of round collar on the gun mantlet. This one's got the Zimmerit on it already.
Oh, really?
Again, this is another example of the manufacturer taking care of something that the average modeler probably is a little intimidated to tackle.
Sure. If you want to build one, you want to build one with Zimmerit, having it molded on is obviously an advantage.
Got another one?
Yes, I've got one final one. For Hobby, F-O-R-E, Hobby,
yep,
has announced a 72nd scale M24 Chaffee. I don't know how many Chaffees are out there. I know Hasegawa did one back in the day, and I'm not sure if anyone else subsequently released one, but the Chaffee is a cool-looking tank, and again, if your choice is the old Hasegawa kit, having a new M24, what's not to love about that? I'm telling you, 72nd scale armor is the current hot thing, and so I think this is going to be a great addition to 72nd scale armor availability.
It's the other hot thing. I think 16th scale is the hot thing, and I think the 72nd scale is the one that's going to actually have the staying power. That's my prediction.
Yes, I would agree.
Well, there are two other plastic Chaffees. In this scale are close. There's a Matchbox one.
Okay, well, yeah.
On the little diorama base, so take it or leave it.
Right.
And OKB Grigov, that company out of Bulgaria.
Bulgaria.
They've got one in injection molded plastic.
Is it injection?
Yes, it is, which is kind of sucks for them because they've invested in doing this thing in plastic and now this kit comes out.
Yeah. I didn't realize that. I thought theirs was in resin, like most of their stuff.
It's not. It's their one plastic kit.
Hopefully they've made their money.
Or sold their work to Flyhawk.
You mean Four? Yeah.
Foray. Yeah. Sold their work to Foray. Got any more? I'm done.
Mike, we're at the end of the episode. I'm assuming that you and I have both reached the end of our modeling fluid. I can report that Apocalypse Brew Works Atomic Amber, really good. Very drinkable, 5.4% alcohol by volume, so it's relatively light. Yeah, I would drink this again in a heartbeat. And, next time I pass by, assuming that you can pick up a six-pack directly from the brewery, I may stop and do that.
This Old Forester 1920.
I know that's good.
Yeah, it's good. But it's not 5 point whatever.
No.
I think it's 115 proof.
Yes, it is. It's 115 proof, which means that you need to drink it very carefully.
Once you get past the heat of the 115, it's really got a lot of flavor.
Keep in mind, you and I took that to, was it Vegas or Omaha?
Yeah, it was Vegas.
Okay. You're right. There's some heat there because of the ABV, but I don't think that heat is that noticeable.
I think in your first pour, it kind of is, but I don't think you have to get through the whole drink to get past it. And once you do, there's just, it pops. This one pops with flavor. It's really, really good.
It really does.
It's just a little hot on the front end.
Congratulations. Definitely a good choice for celebrating a milestone achievement in your career. We're at the end of this episode, and at this point, it's our shout outs. Mike, do you have any shout outs?
As usual, I want to shout out all the folks who've made Plastic Model Mojo possible through their financial contributions and their generosity. If you'd like to join those folks, if you'd like to make a recurring contribution, you could do so through Patreon, www.patreon.com/plasticmodelmojo. There you can make a pledge from $1 on up, and Patreon will handle that monthly billing for you. If you'd like to make a one-time contribution or manage your own recurring contribution, you can do so with PayPal. And if you go to www.plasticmodelmojo.com, in the upper right-hand corner of our webpage is a heart icon. And that icon will take you directly to our PayPal link, and there you can do whatever you want. And whatever you do is greatly appreciated.
Yes.
Dave, you got any more shout-outs?
That's it, man.
Well, Dave, that means we're at the end of this thing.
I know, and this has been a good one. I think it's probably been influenced by the fact that you and I have had a really good modeling experience over the last week.
Well, I think you're right, my friend, and I hope this continues in this coming week and beyond.
You and me both. You know what they say, man.
So many kits.
So little time.